everybody, and welcome to Adjusted. I'm your host, Greg Hamlin, coming at you from beautiful Birmingham, Alabama, and Berkeley Industrial Comp. And today, I will be sharing the spotlight with two guests from Berkeley Industrial Comp. First, we have Dwayne Hathaway. Dwayne, if you could say hello to everybody.
Hey, everybody. Dwayne with Berkeley. I'm a senior risk management consultant on the RAMP team. And for everybody that's not familiar with that acronym, it stands for Risk Assessment, Management, and Prevention. And that's what we have titled our risk management department.
So, Dwayne, where are you out of, for those who don't know?
Greg, I'm out of Nicholasville. It's just outside Lexington, Kentucky, about 10 minutes from our satellite office in the Lexington area. Beautiful, beautiful area.
Yeah, I love that area. I always say that's God's country when you get in those hills where all the horse farms are. So
that's right. Thoroughbreds, baby.
That's right. Well, we're glad to have you, Dwayne. And then also with me today, I have Randon Lessing. Randon, if you could say hello to everybody and introduce yourself.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. I'm Randon Lessing. I'm also a senior risk management consultant with the RAMP team. And my territory is the Western United States. And I'm calling in from Southern Utah, St. George, Utah, which is southwest corner right there, about 90 miles north of Las Vegas on I-15.
That's another one of my favorite spots. So you guys are both parked in places I love going. They always say once you get that red rock in your shoes, there's no getting it out. So I spent a couple of years out that way and fell in love with the West. So you're definitely in a beautiful part of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of fun things to do out here.
For sure. For sure. Well, for everybody who's listening, we wanted to do a special episode called Home Safe for the Holidays. Our RAMP team, which is our safety folks, each year does a campaign that starts about this time of the year to focus on safety so that we can really make sure that all the insurance we're working with can get their folks home safe for the holidays. And so we're going to do a safety-focused episode today. But before we get too far into the weeds of that, I thought it would be great just to learn a little bit more about how each of you got into the industry. So, Dwayne, when you were in kindergarten, did you know this was your calling?
No. When I was in kindergarten, I was thinking about being a professional baseball player, Greg, and maybe driving a bulldozer. Part of that dream came through because I got into construction, spent many years working in the construction of and renovation of healthcare facilities, nursing homes, hospitals, ambulatory surgery centers. Did a lot of hurricane response work because I was in Florida. For all the folks in Florida right now, my thoughts and prayers go out to you. Hurricane Ian's bearing down on the state. I know there'll be plenty of work to do, and hope everybody stays safe and confident during the rebuilding process. But that's what I started my career doing. Healthcare facilities and construction, and then plenty of hurricane response and remediation work.
So how did you end up in the insurance industry, Dwayne?
Well, I got a unique opportunity while performing the construction remediation projects post-hurricane. I ended up dealing with some people in the insurance industry and made some relationships, and turns out they were looking for somebody with construction industry and healthcare experience to look at some of their accounts. So while I was in construction, I began doing some insurance consulting. And years later, ended up doing some of that consulting work for Berkeley Industrial Comp, formerly American Mining Insurance Company, and led to this opportunity. Here I am, 5 years in the insurance industry, loving it every day, don't have to manage people or projects anymore. So good industry to be in, great people, loving where I'm at.
Well, we're sure glad you're with us. You add a lot of value for sure. So, Randon, for you on your end, how did you end up in the insurance industry or into safety?
Yeah, I would say looking back on it all, it's related to my upbringing. My dad is a residential and commercial building official, and I actually interned with him when I was a senior in high school. So although this is different, I would say they are similar. I got my degree. My first big opportunity was in the trade show industry in Las Vegas, Nevada. I started in operations, and about 6 months into it, I moved over into safety. not because I necessarily wanted to be a safety guy, but I really liked the supervisor that was in charge of the safety department. He was a really cool guy. So Derek Pinnick, if he ever picks up on the podcast, I went over there to work for Derek, who was a retired New York police detective. And I should say my undergrad was in criminal justice. So me and him hit it off. We were good friends. I wanted to work for him. I went into safety and I crossed paths with a insurance loss control consultant when I was in safety in the trade show industry. He came out and did some data analysis on our claims, did a site visit. And I was like, man, this is, if I'm going to stay in safety, I think that's the ticket for me. It just immediately interested me. So after that, I worked there for about right around 5 years. We decided we wanted to make a move out of Las Vegas, started having kids and wanted to raise them somewhere else, either in, well, we kind of looked all over, but we were leaning towards Utah or Idaho. That's where my wife's from. And I got a loss control job in Idaho in the insurance industry, working for a broker. And I worked there for 5 years. I wanted to come back to the Red Rock, get it back into my boots, like you were saying. Born and raised here, deep roots in Southern Utah. And this opportunity was blown on the internet and applied for it. And here I am, gave me opportunity to move back to Southern Utah. So I took it.
That's great. That's great. Well, we definitely appreciate your expertise out West. I know you do great work for us out there and appreciate everything you add. So both you and Dwayne are senior risk management consultants. And I know we hear about risk consultants a lot in the insurance industry. Not all carriers actually have staff that are senior risk management consultants, which I think makes us a little bit unique. So I thought maybe, Brandon, if you could tell us a little bit about what it means to be a senior risk management consultant for a work comp insurance carrier. How does that work and what do you do?
Yeah, I see our role as being kind of a double approach or two-pronged. The RAMP risk assessment's a big part of our job. So when our underwriting gets a new submission from agencies, the risk assessment first and foremost. So we go meet with potential clients or prospective clients, whatever term you'd like to use. And we ask a lot of questions. We try to visit job sites, meet with supervisors, senior leadership of the company, and kind of gauge where they are with their safety program. And we produce a report and that goes off to underwriting to help them make an analysis on the policy quoting process and what would be a fair number. And there's a lot that goes into that. So risk assessment would be the first part of our role, and management prevention being the other part. So once we bind coverage with a policy, we shift gears over to, I say it, in it to win it together. Them not having losses benefits them and us. The best claim is one that never occurs. So we really consult. We partner with our policyholders through different services that we offer, as well as doing site visits and help them develop a more effective safety program. And I will say this, safety is a lot like ranching. Your work's never going to end. There's always somewhere to focus, something to be done. So that's a big part of it with our current policies, is just servicing them and really help them develop their safety programs and be successful.
That's fantastic. And I couldn't agree more. Safety is a ongoing, there's always something more that you can do to improve. And, you know, Dwayne, I've been on visits with you a number of times and I've heard you say we get in where we fit in. So talk to me about what that looks like once we've found the policy.
Yeah. Getting in where you fit in is all about relationships and analysis. Real important part of what we do is building trust through relationships with our clients so that they open up to us and let us know where they need help. You know, if you send a risk consultant out like many carriers do with a checklist and he's poking away at your operations, these clients, they're turned off, they tighten up. And a lot of times you're not going to get the information you need to really be helpful. So I spend my time, like many of the other RAMP guys, building relationships and then getting in where we fit in. And that's finding where they have the most exposure, where are the weaknesses in their programs, What resources do they need from us? How frequently do they need to see us? It's about building relationships and getting in where you fit in.
That's great, Dwayne. And I think that's one thing that really separates us from a lot of our competition is just the opportunity to have people who have the kind of experience that both you and Randon have doing this on the other side and then now coming to the carry perspective to try to help them win. Because like I think Randon said, when they're winning, we're winning. So we really want the same things. So this every year, the last couple of years anyway, we've had your department has had a campaign called Home Safe for the Holidays. And Dwayne, if you could talk a little bit about what that campaign is between now and the end of the year so that our audience knows, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, of course. Our department collectively with the leadership of Ann Langham came up with this initiative, Home Safe for the Holidays, kicks off in October, runs through December. And it's an effort to help our customers ensure that their employees make it home safely during the holidays. And this initiative focuses at three key areas, one each month in this consecutive order, wheels, gravity, and complacency. We really feel that if you can get a handle on these three areas, you're going to perform well. These three areas present some of the most significant exposure that we're up against. You know, motor vehicle crashes accounted for 40% of all work-related injuries over the past few years, and they eat up, Greg, you know this, they eat up an overwhelming majority of a lot of our claims dollars. The second category is gravity. Falls account for almost 250,000 injuries each year that also result in time away from work. According to OSHA, in the construction industry, which we do a lot of, nearly a third of all construction fatalities were due to falls. And then complacency, while it's a tough category to get statistical with, there is some research that says it results in 442 deaths each day around the country in some form, shape, or manner. And most of those are preventable. You know, on average, less than 1% of OSHA violations are classified as willful, implying that more than 99%, or what I'm implying is that more than 99% of violations were not committed willfully. So people, you know, they get complacent, not on purpose, but because maybe they've done something for so long and they're on autopilot and what seemed hazardous to them when they started working just doesn't seem that way 5 years later because they've become an expert, they're doing it every day, and they've let their guard down. So we want to highlight this stuff, create awareness, work with our customers to ensure that their employees make it home safely during the holidays.
That's fantastic, Dwayne. And I agree. I mean, having been on the claim side for a long time, those three areas pop up again and again and again. And I would say most of our injuries probably fall into one of those categories, sometimes a couple of them, where we sometimes see complacency and gravity or complacency and wheels. So if an employer really focuses on those three areas, I think they can really make a huge impact on their safety program. Randon, I know we see a lot of motor vehicle accidents, and there's lots of reasons for that. But from your perspective, what are some of the major causes of motor vehicle accidents?
Yeah, so NHTSA.gov is where I pulled these numbers from. You know, they have a handful here. I guess I'll kind of look at it at their top few here, but drunk driving or impaired driving, we'll put those in the same category. Distracted driving with cell phones and, you know, other technology that's in cars is making it's increasing distracted driving. Simple as that. People on their cell phones, texting. And then also it's the stereo systems and computers that are in the cars themselves. People will be playing on that stuff or trying to do something, not paying attention to the road, and they run right into, you know, somebody in front of them or somebody in a crosswalk. So distracted driving is huge. In 2020, NHTS said that 3,142 people were killed as a result of distracted driving. Now, those are investigated by the highway patrol or law enforcement. That's how many they knew for sure were a result of distracted driving. There's probably more than that, but they pulled cell phone records or witness statements and they knew distracted driving was the leading cause of the fatality. So huge problem, and it continues to get worse, unfortunately, with distracted driving. Simple, the choice to wear your seatbelt or not wear your seatbelt. NHTSA says over 15,000 lives were saved by people wearing their seatbelt. So they investigate accidents, and they're saying there was 15,000 lives saved following an accident from their investigation. Had they not worn it, they probably would have passed away in the car accident. So that's a huge decision that we all make when we get in our car, simply putting a seatbelt on, speeding, and then drowsy or fatigue driving. So those are the main categories. I know working with our policy holders, a lot of business owners, they always go to that. That's what really keeps them up at night or worries them the most, because you're at the disposal or the exposure of what other people are doing on the road. You're not necessarily fully in control of the whole thing. But with that being said, there is quite a bit you can do as an employer to reduce your risk. And I don't know if you want to dive into those right now or...
I would love to. I know you mentioned seatbelts and the importance of wearing those. So I think that's an obvious one. When you get into some of the distracted driving, and I guess the other thing I would maybe add is we insure a lot of policyholders that have construction vehicles and have people who are working around them that may not be in the vehicle. I can think of some difficult injuries we've had where employees have been hit or maybe a leg was run over. So talking about how do you avoid that as well as maybe some of the distraction that are out there?
Yeah, first and foremost, employers need to have a written policy on distracted driving. And they need to have a safety stand-down meeting of some kind, whether it be a toolbox talk or you get everybody together. There's multiple ways to facilitate it, but it starts with a written policy. And I call it a driver safety pledge. So if you have workers that are going to drive company vehicles on behalf of the business, that's step one. And you have everybody that's a driver sign off. And there's all of this is on there, not using your cell phone while you're driving, no texting and driving. Stereos, you address all of it directly, wearing your seatbelt, obeying the traffic laws, and you have the driver sign off on it. So you're communicating very clear expectations to your employees from the very beginning of what your expectations are when they drive a company vehicle. So distracted driving starts with a safety pledge. I know if you go to a lot of cell phone carriers and the National Safety Council website, and you just search distracted driving, there's some really awesome resources in there to help. They even have templates and training, links to videos for you to help do awareness campaign on cell phone use while driving. It's a huge problem, and there's a lot of free resources out there for you to do some training and bring awareness to the subject with your employees.
One of the most state-of-the-art solutions that are out there right now, Greg, is the use of cameras that not only face out, but face inward, and they record driver activities, and the employer can monitor cell phone use and other distracted driving behaviors. These cameras, you know, some of the drivers don't like them. They can be set up in a manner where they only record the last 15 seconds associated with a hard braking or a crash. So there are ways to get strategic with using them. More and more of our clients are beginning to use those cameras along with GPS tracking systems where they can see where the driver's at. They can monitor speed, hard braking, and then use that data to hold people accountable and provide the right kind of training based on the behaviors they're seeing.
I think that's great. So you're both hitting on two different things that I think are important to highlight. One is set the expectations up front. Make sure that your employees know what those are and that they've agreed to them. And then the second part of that is following up and making sure there's some accountability to what's been signed. So it sounds like you really need to be doing both if you're going to be successful. So Dwayne, talking a little bit about falls, a lot of our insureds have height exposure to what they're doing, whether that's steel erection, cell phone tower work. I think in one case, we've insured a company that made roller coasters. So all of these things are at heights. What are some of the things that people can do or that companies can do to prevent the dangers that can come with falls?
Man, the number one thing that I'd like to see more of is planning. Okay, one of the key underlying causes of falls is a lack of adequate planning. There was actually a study done where they interviewed a couple thousand people post-incident, and ineffective planning was the most selected category as the primary cause. A lack of planning it's associated with a lower likelihood of using fall protection. You know, they're less likely to use it if there's not a plan in place to use it. So this is, hey, get the guys to, one, like Randon said, you got to have some policies. People got to run through these when they're hired, maybe annually. And then out on the job site, the guys got to get together, spend some time in the morning, talk about a plan. And then the employer's got to provide all the right type of equipment for the job. Workers who are 6 feet or more above lower levels in construction are at risk for serious injury or death. And per OSHA, by the law, they've got to have fall protection. This could be scaffolds with railings. It could be personal fall arrest gear, could be nets. There's all sorts of different engineered systems to protect workers. We just got to have a plan and put it in place.
That's great. You know, I remember one of our injuries that we had that, if I'm remembering right, resulted in a fatality. It was something as simple as, you know, the fall protection gear, there wasn't enough for everybody and they were doing some roofing. And so they were going to wait till somebody came with the additional truck, you know, that had it in the back. So since they didn't have enough for everybody, nobody wore it that day. So it's as simple as just making sure that people are doing that. But I imagine there's a lot of pressure to get these jobs done and that there's deadlines that need to be made. Randon, have you run into that before where, you know, maybe safety precautions are skipped because people are trying to get the job done?
Yeah, I have an example of a past situation that came up where, similar to what you just said, it was a roofing client and they ended up having a fall incident and they didn't have fall protection. And, you know, and they actually had a really good safety program and they had a plan for that site. So everybody, you know, after the investigation, what came out was the foremen were always responsible. The middle manager, supervisor was always responsible to pick up enough equipment before they left the yard in the morning and headed to the job site. The foreman had made a mistake. He didn't gather enough equipment that day, or they had moved a crew over there. I'm not quite sure the exact situation, but their warehouse manager would chew them up inside and out if they would call back to the warehouse for equipment like that. So the foreman didn't want to hear it from the warehouse manager about messing up that morning, so he didn't make the call. And they ended up performing the work, and unfortunate, an incident occurred. So sometimes you got to look at the pressures that are coming in internal. That warehouse manager had, you know, put some undue pressure on these guys. You know, they need the fall protection equipment. Yes, a mistake was made. You know, there's ways to handle that, but you still need to send the equipment. He was so uncomfortable, he didn't even want to call back to the warehouse. So there's a lot of other pressures that are given to these crews that we need to be aware of and be sensitive to as to why certain things are occurring on the job site. So, and you're right, the pressure, everything in construction is on a timeline. If they get there with five or six guys and the GC sees them standing there, absolutely the general contractor is going to have, they're going to exchange words. Why are you not working? You know, and it's like, oh, we're waiting on a harness. You know, it's like lack of production. People get upset when they see that type of thing. So,
yeah. So I think there's two things you guys are highlighting there. One is a safety culture where it's okay to say, hey, we need the right equipment before we get started. And then what Dwayne was saying about the importance of planning, like making sure you have what you need before you get started so you don't have those delays, which I think really leads us to our next topic, which is complacency. You know, I've heard it said that shortcuts kill. And I've seen that happen throughout my career where somebody, you know, was complacent. In fact, we have one just recently where we have a chipper and it's pretty clear you're not supposed to stick your hand in the chipper. Person's been trained on not sticking their hand in the chipper. The chipper has a posting that says, don't stick your hand in the chipper. And in the middle of the day, things are busy and the person got complacent, got jammed up, they stuck their hand in the chipper and now they're missing fingers. So sometimes we see complacency where the training's happened, yet the injury still happens. So Dwayne, talk a little bit about that.
Well, Greg, shortcuts kill. You put it well. We talked a little bit about complacency earlier, getting into autopilot. You know, the best way to curb complacency is to enforce your safety program. You know, it can't be a written document. It's got to be a living action. Top managers got to get involved. They've got to walk the beat, build the culture, host the safety meetings, shake hands, kiss babies, do inspections, hold people accountable. I mean, that's what it's all about. Otherwise, complacency will creep in. And you've got to be your brother's keeper. I mean, they've got to hear it over and over again. Those safety meetings are meaningful. Our workers, our insured workers, don't have to be safety professionals, but they do have to have safety awareness. Just like you and I drive down the interstate, pass a billboard, maybe it's a Coke billboard or a Pepsi billboard. When we get to the cooler at the convenience store, they want us thinking Coke or Pepsi, so that's what we grab.
Yeah.
Well, hosting these safety meetings, we're working at the same goal. We're branding safety, and we're keeping it on their mind. We want them thinking when they grab that ladder to look at the foot to make sure it's stable when they set it up for utilization. Shortcuts kill. I like it, Greg.
So I just can't speak to how many injuries I've seen that come to somebody who's done this for a while and they're in a hurry and they just stop thinking for a minute, whether that's falling off a high wall or, you know, like I said, putting their hand in a chipper. Brandon, I thought it might be good to talk about in the complacency piece about lockout, tagout. I don't know that's something that everybody's familiar with that policy, what it is, how it works, and how that can maybe curb some situations where complacency might sit in. You mind talking a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, I think lockout, tagout often gets missed or not emphasized because it's not as something that's a claim frequency situation. It's not going to be, when you look at somebody's loss histories, you're not going to see multiple instances that led to an injury as a result of not following lockout, tagout. On the flip side of that, when you do have an incident related to lockout, tagout, it tends to be amputations, fatalities, electrocutions. I mean, we're talking very severe, very, very, very severe consequences for not following lockout, tagout. So what I have encountered as I go around, it's super common to find a general written policy and maybe some lockout, tagout equipment in the facility or on the job site. With complicated machinery that has multiple sources of energy, whether it be water, electricity, hydraulics, You need to put blocks so, you know, pieces of equipment can't crash down on the maintenance worker. What gets missed is the machine specific protocol. And that is a requirement by general industry. So if you're in a sawmill manufacturing facility where you have this type of complicated equipment, you really need to have a written procedure specific to that piece of equipment. And you need to have training done for your maintenance workers on how that procedure is to be done. So that's a very common citation. I think it's always in the OSHA's top 10. And what it is the facilities have a lockout tagout policy, but it's not machine specific. And when an accident occurs, that usually tends to be what gets cited is they didn't have it written specific to the piece of equipment. And the workers didn't know what they were doing, to be perfectly honest. They didn't know all the steps to be safe to perform the maintenance. You know, I think a real famous one brought up in a lot of training is an individual that was in like a oven doing some cleaning. I think it was like a tuna fish factory or something to that extent. And they didn't lock it out. He was in there and the guy, another individual working on the night shift, didn't know he was in there and he turned the oven on.
Oh, no.
So those are the type of things that can occur when you do not have a clear, well-trained lockout tagout program. And it's a complacency issue in my book because it doesn't lead to a lot of accidents, but it leads to some horrible severe accidents. So a lot of employers won't understand they need to focus there because they haven't had any incidents or near misses from it until it's too late and somebody's been severely injured. So it is something that we want to shine a lot of awareness on as a RAMP team. You need to get out there and get those procedures written, and you need to conduct a lot of training And you need to be doing an annual review of all of your equipment to make sure you have these procedures in place. So it is an administrative burden to a certain extent, but you absolutely need to be doing lockout, tagout. And one quick thing I wanted to add to complacency, it's a common human behavior. So let's ask ourselves, let's say it's the first time you're asked to climb a 60-foot ladder. You're going to be very nervous about it. You're going to listen to what your supervisor is telling you. You're going to make sure you're tying off and following all the safety protocols as you climb the 60-foot ladder. Okay, let's say you've been in the industry for 15, 20 years, and it's your 1,000th plus time climbing a 60-foot ladder. You're not as nervous about it, and that's complacency. And that's what we deal with. A lot of our severe accidents are from experienced workers that have been on that job site around those severe hazards for years and years and years. And they're comfortable with them because they've been around it so long. But it only takes one little mistake for that hazard to cause a severe, severe injury. So it's just something we all got to talk about because it's a natural human behavior and it creeps up on all the job sites.
I think those are really, really important concepts to remember. And I think you're right. You know, often it's familiarity. When that familiarity sets in, people forget the dangers that are involved and what they do every day. I know on our end, one of the things we've been trying to do better about is catch those near misses, or maybe it could have been a catastrophic injury, but it wasn't, and making sure we get those to you guys so that we can use those as opportunities to avoid the potential really bad injuries. Duane, what's the importance of doing some education or follow-up or after-action reviews on a near miss?
Super important. I just got some information a couple weeks back from Derek out of Alabama for one of our clients. And because of that information, I was able to sit down with our client and help them build out a solution to prevent future recurrence of a similar incident. So the more we can work with our resolution team in that regard, the more successful our clients are going to be. And in turn, we're going to be. So working with resolution, the client, and the ramp team on near misses is a win-win for everybody. So I'm real grateful when I receive that information, and so is the client.
That's fantastic. So I know along with the Home Safe for the Holidays initiative that you have, you also do toolbox talks. As we get into that time of year where we're moving towards the Home Safe for the Holidays campaign, how can people follow along, whether it's your toolbox talks or the Home Safe for the Holiday initiative, Duane?
Yeah, thanks for asking, because this podcast is super valuable in the area of creating awareness, not only in the realm of claims, but here we are with safety. So thank you for asking that. Our clients and really the general public can access a lot of our material through LinkedIn. We're regularly posting resources on LinkedIn. These include safety meeting topics, videos. We're posting it on Twitter. And then all of our videos end up on YouTube. And our clients can have access to these videos at any time, as can the general public. We also disseminate information directly to our clients in our individual regions on a monthly basis, letting them know we're here. Do you need anything? And we target a specific topic. Generally, it's one of OSHA's top 10 most frequently cited areas. That way, they're getting the biggest bang for their buck out of that communication with us. And then as we get into Home Safe for the Holidays, every month, there'll be a new safety blast generated on wheels, another on gravity, and another on complacency. That'll be shot out to our clients, including self-inspection checklists, safety meeting information, posters, videos, etc. And then they'll have our direct contact information. So if they need consultation in any of the areas, maybe they need some help with training, we'll be there for them. So it's a great opportunity for us to work with our clients and mitigate our exposure with these three severe areas.
What you guys do in that is fantastic. And I just remind anybody who's listening, these resources are free and we share them with everybody. So please feel free to check out our YouTube channel follow along on LinkedIn at the posts that Dwayne and Randon and the team make. Those are available. And, you know, our goal is to see everybody gain something, because we know if people are safe, lives are saved. And we want people to be able to do, I mean, we all do this for one reason. We want to spend time with our families and the people we love. And worst thing that could happen is something unfortunate happens and we can't do that. So appreciate your guys' effort on that. This season, one of the things I'm doing is I've really been trying to put good vibes in the universe. I feel like there's a lot of negativity out there in general. And I wanted to end every episode this year just with each of our guests sharing what's their favorite part of what they do each day. Like, what keeps you going? And so I'll kick this to Randon first, and then that'll give you a minute to think about it, Dwayne, too. Randon, what's your favorite part of what you do every day?
Yeah, I would say just servicing others, helping others, because, you know, when you really break it down, if there's something that I did that day or even that week or even that month, if I prevented one severe accident through awareness, you know, telling clients some tips and best practices for a hazard control, that type of thing, if I can prevent one severe accident, that's putting a lot of, as you say, goodwill out into the world, because a severe accident or fatality has some huge real world consequences, not only for the injured worker, but also their families and their loved ones and friends. So that's what really motivates me and keeps me going is that, you know, that one potential prevention, and it's always out there. I think and that's a metric or a number that we'll never be able to track as a ramp team, because it's, the accident never occurred, but it is huge. And that's honestly what keeps me going. I did want to add one quick thing to our resources. Each Wills Gravity and Complacency has a self audit checklist, which is about 15, 20 questions. And it's designed for like a safety manager or someone that's overseeing a safety program to fill out. But it really will allow you to take a very deep dive on, do you have an effective fleet management program? Do you have preventions in place for fall prevention and complacency? It's a deep dive, and we have a really efficient process to play that out with our policyholders and provide them a lot of content and resources to honestly get to best practices in 6 months if they really want to take that deep dive. And it's available to them. It's just a self-audit. It takes them maybe 10 minutes to fill out. It's going to be a lot more work than that on the afterwards, but it's a great start on headed in the right direction, that self-audit checklist.
Great. I'm glad you highlighted that, Randon. And I think, honestly, this is one of the things that really separates us from a lot of our competition in the marketplace, is we have these in-house safety professionals that really partner to help our insureds improve their programs. Because again, if they win, we win, and we're in this together. And so I'm glad that you highlighted that, and encourage any of our policyholders to reach out, because we're here for you, for them. Dwayne, so I'll ask you the same question. What's your favorite part about what you do every day?
Greg, I love to get in where I fit in.
I knew you'd say that.
All right. I love getting in, making those relationships, man. I love looking at our retention rate. Okay, we're always hovering over 85 up to 90%. And I love looking at that number and thinking that I made the difference on these accounts to stay with us. I could rattle off half a dozen accounts that I know spent an extra $10,000, $20,000 just to continue doing business with us, because we turn it into a relationship, not just an insurance program. So that's what I love about it. To talk about resources a little more, I want everybody to know that's listening, you've got access to Randon and I and your individual ramp consultant and everything we've talked about, but we've also got something called the Risk Management Center. This is a comprehensive compliance platform for small businesses, chock full of safety meetings, inspection templates, training videos, training modules. When I say comprehensive, I mean it. It's also got an HR suite with state-specific guidance on different areas when it comes to employment practices. And it's really just a comprehensive compliance platform for small businesses in the realm of safety and HR. And this is something that, you know, anybody with 50 or 100 employees would be looking at 10 to 20 grand a year for a license to utilize. We cover that for our clients. So if you're not already using it, make sure to holler at your ramp representative and we'll get you a demo and get you set up. There's no cost. You know, the better you guys do with this stuff, the better we do.
I'm glad that you highlighted that. And again, that's another differentiator. And, you know, we are in the business of insuring companies with high hazard exposure. So safety is really, really important because the consequences of not being safe are life-changing. I really want to thank both of you, Dwayne and Randon, for your expertise and sharing some of your thoughts on safety. Really encourage folks to reach out to them or any of our safety professionals and remind people of the podcast theme to do right, think differently, and don't forget to care. That's it for today, guys, but encourage you to follow along on our blog on the off weeks, and we'll see you again with our next episode 2 weeks later. Thanks, everybody.